Welcome to At a Crossroads of the Naked Podcaster, where we bear it all emotionally and spiritually. This podcast is designed to support and uplift you as a Christian. I'm your host, Jen Taylor from momof18.com. Each week on the podcast, I'll bring you an inspiring message to support you in designing and creating a vibrant, fulfilling life. Before we dive in, please visit all of the links in the communities as this is a live broadcast. Feel free to ask questions I can answer during the podcast. At Crossroads with the Naked Podcasters for Christians who know that there is more to life and that our true authentic souls are built for greatness. You are built with strength and love that is meant to shine through during times of conflict and celebration. Welcome. I can't wait to bear it all with you. In my business as a coach for Christian women, I help them to step into who they are meant to be and be inspired by their purpose and God-given gifts. Follow the links to sign up for my free training on how you as a Christian can begin to design the life that's meant to for you. Reach out to me at any time on momof18.com. Hello and welcome and welcome. Woohoo!
Hello.
Hello, Kimberly Love. So I am introducing you, but you know, I went back. I was like, how did we actually initially meet? And I'm pretty sure it was through Brains Magazine because both of us are executive contributors and we were both named as influential leaders of the top 500 entrepreneurs for the 500 global list of 2020. That's a mouthful. I think that's how we originally met. You know, it was January of 2020. Our first email was January 2020.
Oh.
It's been an 18-month love. I know.
Love affair. Yeah,
I love that. Affair. For 18 months. Truly. And that's your last name too. That was not an intentional play on words. But yeah, it's been a year and a half. And I first reached out to you because of your show.
Yes. Yeah, I had you on as a guest, which was wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah. So this has been like a while that we've been.
It's been a wild ride.
It's been so fun. I just had no idea it was that long. So that was pretty exciting. Let's jump in. I want to talk about Biking Queens and anything else you have going on. So lay it on me.
Okay. So Biking Queens was kind of something that was a thought process all of last year, because last year was a struggle for everybody. And when I went through my personal struggles years ago, I was all by myself and I fought out of it all by myself. And I thought, like, that's not right. you know, women especially, you know, often will do everything all by themselves. You know, they're doing their careers, they're at home with their husband, they're raising children. And sometimes it's hard to ask for help. And I thought, what can I do to offer help to women, you know, that would not only help them in their love life and their career, but just life in general, especially if they're going through a healing process. So Biking Queens was birthed as a membership site for women who can go on there and find experts, courses, books, you know, coaches, just a roundabout area where they can find a support system, where they can find ways of healing themselves, finding healthy relationships. They're going to go in there. They're going to talk about law of attraction, manifestation, basically every possible way that you could find help to not only change your life, but bring about growth into your life as well. So that's Biking Queens.
I mean, it was so great to, like, we got to know each other and it made me so excited because you want to uplift other women and how passionate you are. You are so spot on about us doing it alone. And just in this podcast, I've interviewed almost exclusively entrepreneurs, and it hasn't been on purpose, but I've loved that. And 100% of us birth our business from our struggle. 100%. And so, but you quit your job to become a full-time artist. Your journey's like different throughout this. And so what else do you have going on? Because I know you have the radio show. It's not actually a podcast. It's a radio show. Right?
It's a radio show. It's traditional radio. So it's called Crushing 40. And that was actually birthed because I wrote my memoir. It's got to be 3 years now. So I wrote my memoir. It's called You Taste Like Whiskey and Sunshine. And it's basically about my experiences with abuse and how I overcame them. So I was actually invited on the same station that I host now. And, you know, so they invited me on, they wanted to talk about my book and in my experiences. And they had such a good response from my show that they offered me my own show. So that's kind of how Crushing 40 was birthed. And I mean, at first I was like, there's no way I can do my own radio show. It was like so beyond my comfort zone. You know, I'm used to writing books at home, you know, minding my own business, you know, not talking on the radio. And at first I was like, no, I'm not going to do that. And then I started to talk to people and they were like, are you out of your mind? You've been offered a radio show, go and do things. And so I did it. And the shocking part for me was that I was really good at it. I was a natural. And people kept saying that, like, this is your first show. This is crazy. And to me, it opened my eyes to the possibilities of life, because I think that when a door opens for you, even if that door is scary, you should take it. Jump at that opportunity, because that door opens so many other doors. And now I've recently been offered my own talk show that's launching in October called That's What She Said with Kimberly Love. And so, I mean, it's just a constant stream of amazing experiences. And that's what I want to bring to other people's life.
Holy cow. Yeah. I mean, there's like, however, 7 bazillion, that's probably a slight exaggeration, but not much podcasts out there, you know, that have started. Right. And like 50% of them have 7 or less episodes. I mean, like, it's crazy. And we do that. I mean, like the same thing. First of all, you and I wrote books about the same thing. Right? Our life in dysfunction and how we got through it, because you get through it alone. And then you, my experience to that, I'm sure, was the same as yours. You think, okay, how can I help other women to not do it alone? Right? And the radio show was a huge part of that.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, it's based around empowerment. So any guests that I have on the show, they have to be able to share not only their journey, but some way in which they can inspire somebody to either overcome a struggle or inspire them to live a better life. So I've had crazy guests. I've had like paranormal investigators. I've had people from the Food Network. But the whole theme around the show is that you have to help somebody out of a struggle. So it's all about, you know, empowering women once again to figure out a way to not only grow, but to love their life, you know, whether that's, you know, finding a new relationship or starting that career they've always dreamed of or whatever the case may be. The idea is that we want the best for women, and we always want to strive for better things, always.
I feel like a lot of us, we did choose our life. And sometimes that meant like checking the boxes of what you're supposed to do, like going to college, getting married, getting a house, having a dog, 2.3 kids. I mean, like, whatever. There's all these like normal things you're supposed to do when you go out into the big bad world. And we did choose it. And they were even things we wanted. But don't you think lots of women, I mean, men too, but since we're focusing on women, we wake up and we're like, okay, dude, this was exactly what I wanted. But seriously, I had no idea this is what it's
That's so spot on, actually. But I mean, when I was younger, I was, you know, the goal was to be an actress. You know, I was going off to Hollywood, and that was, you know, I was going to get up and accept my Oscar one day. That was the goal. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I look back and I'm like, how the hell did I get here? Because this definitely wasn't the plan. But like you said, everything I'm doing right now is because of things that I've experienced in my life, you know, the struggles that I've gone through. And I love my life.
Yeah.
You know, I get to meet amazing people every single day. And when I get an email from somebody that I've helped, there's no better feeling in the world. So like, you try and figure out how the hell you got here, but it all makes sense. You know? Like, this is definitely what I've been meant to do.
Well, also, sorry, I didn't realize I have an iPad hidden somewhere that I didn't even know if it had notifications on it. I have everything shut up. Well, so how much can you tell us about the show? And I am so excited.
I can tell you everything about it.
Tell us.
No, so I mean, so originally I was going to be like, well, I'm just going to like crushing 40 at over there. But then I thought, you know what? This is an experience to do something completely different. So the show is called That's What She Said. And it's going to be based around love and relationships, you know, sex and what it means to have a healthy experience in relationships and dating. And since we're, of course, we're going to have some like awesome shows where it's like dating disasters and that sort of thing, because I have a lot of them. And it's just kind of like a fun show about love and what it means to be in a healthy relationship, because I was in a lot of toxic ones. And, you know, I talked to a lot of women about, you know, their toxic relationships and what it means to finally be in a healthy relationship. And I'm in one now and it's just glorious. And I just love the idea of helping other women to, well, men and women, like this show is for everybody now. So it's like, that's what I want is to show the good side of love. Because I mean, when you're in society right now, sometimes it's kind of depressing when you think about, especially if you're in the dating world, the way society has dating right now and yeah. It's not always fun. So it's going to be, yeah, I can't wait. It's going to be a good experience. Maybe we'll have you on. You know, you have some great love stories.
I do. I love my love stories. But I have a friend who's just getting ready to start dating. And, you know, she's in Australia. Where are you at?
Florida.
Okay. She's in Australia and their mask mandate kicked back in again, right? And she's like, how are you supposed to date? And I'm like, it's ninja dating. You're like,
I don't know. Because
it's ninja.
I couldn't even imagine. I mean, I've never worn a mask. Never. You know, I'm kind of like a freedom fighter from back home. So I've never even put myself in that situation. So I don't know what I would do if I showed up on a date and he was wearing a mask. I'd be just like, dude, what are we doing here? But I mean, I don't know what you do.
I don't know either. I don't know. It's
sad that that's becoming the norm, you know, that.
You can get an empty coffee cup, just an empty like Starbucks cup. And as long as you are like drinking or eating,
yeah,
you don't have to have right. Anyway, because the pandemic is only contagious if you're not holding a drink.
Exactly.
So, you know, I'm like, you're going to hold an empty coffee cup and pretend to sip it every once in a while. And just not like, I don't know. It's so bizarre.
Just get like a plate of nachos. Just endless eating, you know. Yeah.
You're all, everyone's like 50 pounds heavier after their
right.
But, you know, it's all good. Anyway, that's gonna be so much fun. I mean, like, obviously I had no idea you were doing that, but holy cow, how exciting that is.
Yeah. You know, I got my plate full for sure, but you know, I love it. I love every moment of it. So every time like a new opportunity comes, I'm like, yeah, I can do this too. I can do everything. I'm like laying awake at night, like, you know, am I gonna do this?
When people offer you a show, you have help from that platform. And
yes,
yes,
thank God.
Yeah, because I was with a TV station for 6 months, and I think there's pros and cons to having that help. I mean, like, in one part of it was like, I wasn't doing half the stuff I was doing before. They take it over. They're doing everything, right? The other thing is that you don't have control of doing any of it either. Like, it's at the mercy of someone else. If it's a good setup, that would be so amazing to not have to do all the things. Because a TV show, I mean, come on. Like, I would not be on the back end producing my own TV show.
No.
So that is amazing. What have you turned down? I love your jump out of the plane, parachute, no big deal.
No. I can't say that I've turned down anything. I read this book, and I wish I could properly remember the title, but it was it was called, and I think they made a movie out of it. It was, I think it was like Say Yes. And the whole premise around the book is that you spend a year saying yes to everything. Like all the opportunities come your way, you're not allowed to let fear get in the way of it. So if an opportunity comes, you're going to say yes, and you're going to go out and do this thing. So whether it's your own talk show or going skydiving or going on that blind date or whatever the case may be, you're supposed to say yes. And these, the idea behind the book is that these are opening doors, allowing you to do something without succumbing to fear all the time, which, I mean, back in the day, my whole life was surrounded by fear. I never did anything fun. So the idea for me is that I do go out and do these fun and amazing things because they're amazing. And I want new experiences, especially at my age. Like, I mean, I'm in my 40s and I just want to do everything now, right?
Isn't that crazy? And so I think you hit a point where you care. Well, you don't care what people think, first of all.
Right.
You don't care.
Yes.
Like, there's no maliciousness. There's nothing like that. It's not like you want to hurt people, but you also just kind of don't care. You lose a lot of that. And, you know, you start to realize that life's more fleeting. Like, it really means more to you.
Yes.
By that time. So you don't want to miss out. But I taught my kids this too. Like, on your deathbed, you're not going to say, I regretted doing that thing. You could very well say you regretted not doing that thing.
Absolutely.
So don't have that mentality. Just, you know, sometimes you can't do everything. Like, I didn't skydive when I had babies at home, just in case.
Yeah.
Didn't like, you know, wasn't the right time. But yeah, that's awesome. What about any more books in the make? Have you thought
about? I have a 3-book series coming out this fall, but it's going to be fiction this time. I've been dying. I've had kind of manuscripts kind of on the back burner for a long time because I was doing all these things, but I always wanted to write crime thrillers. So that's what I'm releasing this fall, is crime thrillers, serial killer stuff.
So it's your dark side.
Yes.
You know, the writer is always every character.
Yes, exactly. Well, I mean, that's kind of like the type of person I am, though. Like, I eat up serial killer documentaries. And one of my favorite shows is like Law & Order, SVU. Like, I eat this stuff up. And so when I originally became a writer, that's what I wanted to do, was write fiction. But when I wrote You Taste Like Whiskey and Sunshine, it was because I had to let that stuff out. Like, that was kind of part of my healing journey of getting it out and hopefully allowing other people to be helped by that same story. So that was the book that came out. But it's always kind of been my passion to write fiction. So that's, I'm going to give that a go this fall and see how it goes.
That's awesome. I know I had a family member that was like, why do you want to write this book about your past? Just let it stay there. And I'm like, man, there's something freeing, absolutely freeing in sharing it, and cathartic about getting that out. And especially when your goal 100% is that, like, if I just help one person, I just want to help one person, right? And then that becomes compound interest. So I get that. Let's go back in time.
Hmm. Shall we? Of course.
Shall we? Jump in. Well, where are you going to start?
I was born in the 70s. I was a 90s kid, which is, by the way, the best generation ever. Like, our music alone was epic. But, I mean, I was really shy as a kid, which was, I mean, so much different from who I am now. But I find that being that shy also got me into some trouble. Like, I went through childhood abuse with a sister. She was quite a bit older than me, almost like 15 years older than me. And she was kind of left as my babysitter. And she was very, very psychologically abusive. Like, she despised me on a cellular level. And it wasn't until many years ago I found out that it was because of my father, who was very abusive. And I never knew my father because my mom left him when I was 6 months old. But apparently my sisters kind of got the brunt of who he was as an individual. And because I was his only daughter, his only biological daughter, she kind of, and I look exactly like him. So she kind of took me as a persona, I guess, of who he was, and she just despised me. And so I endured a lot of psychological trauma from her growing up. And it wasn't until I was a teenager and I ran away from home that I was kind of able to get away from that. But at the time, the damage was done. I was a very insecure girl, and that kind of led me into meeting boys that weren't very good for me. And that led me into a domestic abusive relationship. So that's kind of like, I guess, brushing over a lot, but that's, I guess, in an essence of what my childhood was like.
So same mom, different dads with these sisters?
Yeah.
Okay. So your mom and your dad got together when your sister was little,
mm-hmm.
and he abused her.
Mm-hmm.
And then you came along and he was gone. But also, I mean, who knows if he would have been abusive to you, because that's a different
right.
dynamic.
Right. I mean, he had a son as well from a different marriage, and he physically, like, he would punch the kid in the face. So he was okay. abusive to his own kid. So I imagine, sure, it would have happened to me as well. And my mom actually fled in the night away from him. And he was so awful that she left town and changed our name so that he could never find us. So it was like quite the, you know, but I've never known him. I mean, I have a picture of him, and I'm sitting on his lap as a baby, but that's like, I have no memories of him. I've never seen him since. And so.
Did she change your name also?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. She changed all our names. So I went to school with like a completely fabricated name.
And back then you could, because they didn't check things the same way. They,
no, honestly, yeah, I have my public school diploma in a name that doesn't actually exist. Like, I don't have a birth certificate of that name at all. Like, she just changed our name and then enrolled us in school, and nobody sent anything. And so, yeah, you know what I mean?
Isn't that crazy?
Well, I mean, back then they could do anything, right? Like, let's be honest.
Yeah. I mean, with paperwork, you could. And, you know, now parents can't understand. If I say no one's allowed to pick up this child, no one will ever pick up this child. And you need to have, like, my youngest daughter, her mom died. And I have the same last name. And I'm on all of the paperwork. And I don't have the right to anything because I haven't officially adopted her yet. So I'm a step parent. Like, I have no right. I cannot do almost anything at the school compared to you.
Right? I don't know. I honestly don't know how she was able to pull it off, but
I at the time, though, once you were enrolled originally, if you didn't move around, no one ever asked for paperwork on subsequent years. So if she got through that first year of enrolling you with fake names, no one would have ever asked for anything back there. They didn't need to.
And I was at the same school until I graduated. So there would have been no need to provide any further paperwork at that point. So I graduated under that name. And then when I went to high school, I changed my name back to my father's name, which was my original birth certificate. And then I kept that until I was married.
Holy cow, that's nuts. So what was your mom like growing up?
Well, my mom was fantastic. Like, she was, as far as a loving, supportive human being could be, like, she was it. But she also had four children, and she was doing it all by herself. So she was stretched to the limit with us. So, I mean, did she have any idea that I was being abused? No. And when I tried to tell her, it was almost like, at first it was like kind of, well, sibling rivalry. Like, you know, it was hard to explain to her. And it wasn't until many years later that she actually got it, because she started to see things herself. And then other family members were coming to her and saying stuff like, you know, I saw Jenny with Kim the other day and it wasn't very, you know. So it wasn't until many years later that she actually started to understand that it wasn't sibling rivalry. It was something quite different. And by then I was gone out of the house, but now I don't I don't have any relationship with my sister. We don't speak, and she doesn't have a relationship with my mother. And she kind of transferred her abuse onto like her own children, and she doesn't have any relationships with them either. So it's like, she's a quite the train wreck.
Well, and I was going to ask that, what about, there were four of you total. So what, you were the youngest?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. So what are your, what is the interaction with the other kids?
Well, I have another sister who is basically the same age as the sister that abused me. And she was out of the house before I was even born. Like she left home when she was 17 and like moved to Toronto, which was like 5 hours from my hometown. So I didn't even know my other sister all that well because they were much older and she left home. And then there was my brother who's 2 years older than me. And my sister worshiped the ground that he walked on. Like she had a thing with boys and he was the only boy in the family and they had a great relationship. So.
Wow. So that's, isn't it different? Isn't it crazy? Like ages and genders and how that interaction is. And the thing that is so hard about anything emotional, and this conversation has come up so many times in my life, is that you can't quantify emotional abuse.
Mm-hmm.
With physical abuse, when it's reported, social services wants to see pictures.
Mm-hmm.
Of your throat after you were choked, of the bruise. Yeah. You actually, if a child reports that someone is being physically abusive, they need to report it when it happens.
Mm-hmm.
Like, look at this, look at the bruises yes. in my body, you know, so-and-so did this, and they take pictures of them. And if it's physical and you don't have bruises, or if it's emotional, you can't quantify how much damage that's being done. So
nobody really does anything about emotional abuse. Like you have to go and get evaluated.
Right.
And then have a doctor say, yep, you know, she's got some stuff going on before they'll even attempt to care about the situation.
Yeah. Well, it's really hard to add it up. And it's kind of like your word against my word sort of thing. I mean, I hate how difficult it is because I think more damage happens. I remember being a kid and thinking, just hit me and get it over with.
Right. Like, yes.
I can heal from that.
At least those bruises go away, right?
Yeah, physical abuse actually was not the hardest part at all. But man, the emotional, it's like you can't escape it. So much more difficult. So you still have a great relationship with your mom.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, my mother's always been my biggest support system. I mean, obviously, like I had a troubled youth, and I mean, I was a disaster as a teenager because of everything I'd gone through, and I just went into rebellion mode, and then I ran away from home. And so, yeah, my teen years were a disaster. But once I became an adult and was able to understand what it actually meant to be a parent and what my mother went through raising four kids on her own, you know, we were able to reestablish a better relationship. And yeah, now, I mean, like I said, she always raised me to believe that I could do anything. And I think in part, like, she's the reason why I'm here now. Because she left that in me where I knew that no matter what happened, I could always go beyond that and do something else.
So let's talk teenage years, rebellion, running away, and jumping into relationships. How fun is that?
Right? Well, I mean, I look back on it now and the things that I did as a teenager, like, I don't know how my mother survived it because I have a teenager now. And she is like a gift from God. Like, I don't know. You know what I mean? I thought karma was going to come back and get me, but it hasn't yet. So I think about the stuff that I did, like, you know, going to parties and getting hammered with my friends. I showed up to high school with a bottle of whiskey one time. You know, I almost got kicked out of school. You know, I dated guys way too young. And then, I mean, I got into an abusive relationship and I basically did everything possible that I wasn't allowed to do. And, you know, I would remember coming home at 5 a.m. sometimes. And I don't know how my mother did not beat me, you know, for all the stuff that I did to her, because honestly, like, I put her through the ringer. And I think about my child doing the things that I did, and I can't even imagine it. Like, I would be so distraught if I found out that my child was doing half the stuff I got away with. And, but I mean, it was all the result of being abused and told I was a piece of crap for like my entire life. So, you know, you can't be beaten down your whole life and expect to come out, you know, with shining colors. So
at what point did you reckon, I mean, at some point when we're all kind of off the deep end like that, we have to come to the realization that now we're making decisions. Those decisions are destructive. Recognizing an abusive relationship can be really challenging, and leaving it can be the same. So take me through those processes. Like, when did you realize what you were doing was destructive?
Well, when I ran away from home, it was a big wake-up call, because I was 17 and I had no business being out on my own. And, you know, when you're realizing that now you have to figure out how to survive on your own. And I mean, I had a job at the YMCA, you know, I've always worked my entire life. So that was one benefit to my life, was that I was actually working and not on the system or anything. But it was a wake-up call, like grocery shopping and realizing I had these bills to pay, and which actually gave me a lot more respect for my mom, who was doing this all by herself. And I was sitting here like, wow, this is really, really hard. And I remember I met this Italian couple who lived a couple houses down from the apartment that I had. And they actually taught me how to cook. Like, she brought me in and she was giving me loaves of bread and teaching me how to make spaghetti sauce from scratch. And I mean, they were my saving grace, because I was basically eating like ramen noodles for like weeks straight, and I didn't know how to survive. And it was at that point, realizing how hard it was, that I started to make life changes out of it. And at that time, I had met my future husband. And at that point, I was like leaving teenagers, starting university, and that was kind of my pickup to a new life. And I met this man, and he was something completely different from the boy I had dated in high school, who wasn't very nice to me. And at that point, I thought that that was a turning point in my life, that this was going to be something different. But I ended up divorced, and right after that was when I started dating the guy that was physically in like, he was a narcissist, so he was everything abusive that you could possibly be. And it was through that relationship where I had to make my life changes. So it wasn't in my teenage years. It was like much later that I decided that I couldn't live like this anymore.
And then what? I mean, because it's really, really difficult. First of all, abuse is, it's not like a light switch, you know, the person doesn't say, hi, my name's Joe, and punch you in the face. It doesn't work like that. Like, it's insidious. It just sneaks into your life. And then you also feel like, are you the one that's crazy? So it's really hard to recognize. What was that process for you? Like, what helped you through?
That's what people say all the time, is like, when people find out I've been in an abusive relationship, they're always shocked, because they're like, you? Like, how did you get yourself into that? For one thing, I wasn't the same person as I was back then. But the thing is that, like you said, they're not abusive at the beginning. It's not like, you know, people will say to me, well, if you knew he's abusive, why'd you date him? Well, I didn't know he was abusive. Like, they treat you like a queen. You know, they'll bend over, but they're the perfect man. Until about 6 months into it, and then they start to turn it over, and they make sure they got you, right? You're in love, you think everything's amazing, you know, they've manipulated you. So they wait till they get you, and then things start turning around. And for me, you know, I started to see small signs, because, you know, when I first dated him, he used to go on and on about how smart I was and how beautiful I was. And then it started to be like he was comparing me to other women. And then he actually said to me in an argument, do you really think you're smarter than me? You know, if I say something, that's the way it is, smarter than me, right? And so you start to see these kinks in the surface there, but you're still like, oh, it's a bad day. He's having a bad day. And then when you do question things, like I dated a narcissist, which is probably the worst possible guy you could date, and they will make you think you're crazy. They will gaslight you. They will, you know, you'll say, hey, you know, I don't like what's going on here. And they manage to turn the situation around you all the time. And it got to the point where I was literally thinking I was insane. Like every time I questioned him or his behavior or where he was, it was always something that I was doing wrong. Like, well, if you were a better wife, or not a wife, but a girlfriend, if you were better at this, if you were better at that, if you were prettier, if you were doing this, then I would be better. And you're sitting there like, what the hell is going on? And it wasn't until we got into this really bad argument where he was like, the world would be a better place if you committed suicide. Where I was like, whoa, like I'm in something really bad. And I remember leaving the room when he said that. And I went into the bedroom and I crawled under the blankets and I just kind of laid there and cried. And I was just thinking like, how the hell did I get here? Like, how the hell is this the man that I'm in love with? Like, how is this even possible? And it was that moment I remember like a switch went off in my head and where I was like, I deserve better than this. Like, this can't possibly be the man that's supposed to love me, like who's going to take care of me and be there for the next 50 years, right? And so I got out of the room and I called my friend and of course, he was out there smashing things and throwing things around. The moment they think you're leaving, that's it. And I always recommend to women, if you're going to leave, leave with company. Never leave alone. It's a very dangerous situation. And it was hard to get out of that door because there was a lot of pushing. And he pushed my friend through the hall and tried to drag me back to the bedroom. It was a nightmare. But once I got out of it, I was able to breathe long enough to figure out what the heck I was going to do with my life after that.
Wow. And then there's the rebuilding, and it's not the rebuilding from that relationship, which most people think, oh, I've got to heal from this relationship. Nah, like go back further than that because it started as a kid with your sister.
Yes.
It started in utero with your mom and dad. I mean, like started so much further that, right? Yeah. And it's hard to unpack it. So tell me, you left, you got out, which was why I asked you, because it's very dangerous to leave, even with a friend, even calling a friend to help you. It is very dangerous to leave. Yes, women out there that hear this, make sure you have backup and, if possible, a place to go. I mean, I've interviewed people that left barefoot running out of the door. Mm-hmm. And if that's what it takes, that's what it takes. If you can do it differently, do it differently. But because it's crazy and it starts out so small and then all of a sudden you realize you have none of your old friends. You don't know people. You've been cut off. You feel like you're crazy all the time. You're walking on eggshells. Just it's all these things. Right. So what things helped you? You got out of there. And then what that like, because like you escaped that initial trauma. Right. But and then what?
Well, that I guess the moment for me was. I mean, I'm a writer. Not everybody's a writer, but for me, like I have journals from the time I was like 8 years old. So I've always written. I've always put my feelings down on paper. And that's kind of what the beginning of fixing myself was all about. Because like you said, it wasn't about the relationship. It was about the low self-worth I had to get into that relationship. Like, you know, the beating, the emotional beatings that I got as a child left me at such a low self-esteem that I was vulnerable to these situations, these abusive situations I got myself into. So the point is to fix the, why do you feel not worthy of something good, right? And that was the truth of it. I never ever felt like I could have a good man or somebody who was gonna take care of me and love me properly and that sort of thing. So for me, journaling really helped, and it was like the beginning of You Taste Like Whiskey and Sunshine, because I started writing my chapters and all the things that I'd gone through in the past. And to me, I was knitting together a quilt of how did this happen to me? So I was putting all the pieces together one by one, and I was able to recognize, well, that's why, you know, you think you're a piece of crap, right? You know, you don't think you deserve anything better. And this is how you get into the situation.
That's, I mean, I love journaling. I think journaling is like the cornerstone of all things great. Even, I mean, and it doesn't, people get overwhelmed by that. I'm like, it's legitimately, you can take 2 minutes. You can time yourself for 2 minutes. And I love using the timer for people who are a little overwhelmed by journaling. Just set a timer, because you can do that for 2 minutes or 5 minutes or whatever. And you don't have to have anything set. You can just free journal. Which is kind of what it sounded like. You were just like writing down your thoughts and feelings and getting chronological order.
Yeah.
Like what happened? When did it happen? How did this happen? Connecting the dots. Like that helps my brain organize.
It was basically like Dear Diary stuff.
Yeah. I mean, it does not have to be a memoir. It can.
No. Like,
that's how it started. That's how your book started out. Although that wasn't your plan when you started writing.
No.
And it doesn't have to be the end result for anyone else either. It's just, it's cathartic to write things down. Your brain thinks about them and processes differently. If like you, like this is a pen. And if you actually use this pen to write it down, your brain processes things differently. So you started writing it down just to figure it out, which is awesome.
Yeah.
What did you notice from all of that?
Well, I noticed that I had a lot of pain left over from my childhood. And some of it was towards my mother, because as much as I love my mother and believe she was a great support system and she was doing the best she could with what she had, I felt left behind in some ways, right? Like as a child, I thought like, how did you not know? Or, you know, why didn't you help me more? That sort of thing. So as much as it's, you know, I don't know what she could have even done, but, you know, I needed to talk to her. And that was another part of my journey, was going back with my mother and having long talks on the phone about like, this is how I felt as a child. And, you know, we had long talks about what that meant. And I got to see her side of it and how she really was in the dark with a lot of it. And to me, that opened my eyes with, you know, trying to forgive, you know, the things that happened in the past and forgiveness alone, you know, which all Christians know is part of healing, right? Is part of letting go of something and moving on to something better. Because if you hold on to the hurt, if you hold on to anger and bitterness from the past, it's really hard to move on to the future when you're still holding on to that. So that was also part of my journey.
I mean, it's so interesting also. I mean, perspective is a big thing, because when you're really angry, but you don't understand, like you said, your mom is a single mom with four kids. And once you're a parent, you're like, oh my gosh, like how in the world did she do it with, like, we just don't have perspective. We don't have enough life experience. And so, I mean, I know in lots of situations, the anger is diffused by time and life experience, because you just get it. You get where that was, and it makes more sense. So also forgiveness, it's a big, big, big thing, but you can forgive in your heart without having anything to do with the person. And that's something sometimes that's harder when you're talking about that person who was abusive. It's not like you want to forgive and hug it out. That's like not the plan here.
No.
You forgive and move on.
Yeah.
And not with that person. And that's another thing I think a lot of people struggle with. So let's lead us in. I love, because like we've known each other for all these years now.
Right.
And I track you. You post a lot about your relationship now, which I love. I love when I post about my relationship, and I don't realize that I don't do it as often as I probably should. Man, one of my favorite things about my life is my relationship with my husband. Absolutely, hands down. And it hasn't been like that, you know, for over 7.5 years that we've been together. It was really bad for a while too. Not abusive bad, but it was bottom bad for a while. And so, you know, being with somebody where you can work through things and the journey of the relationship, and you have a daughter, so I don't know if he does, but like then you're blending families to some degree. So at some point you went into a relationship that ended up being healthy. You got yourself healthy enough. And then Viking Queens. And I don't know which things happened in which order. So take me through that part of it.
Well, Viking Queens happened first. And I mean, I always got to give credit to coaches because
right.
If you have the opportunity of working with a coach, do it. Because like I said, I did it all on my own, and man, it was rough, you know. And there wasn't even coaches around, I don't think. No, not anything like there is now, right. You know, where it's like there's a relationship coach, there's like a law of attraction coach. Like there's a coach of everything now. And I think it's so wonderful because, man, that would have helped me a lot. And that's why I did Viking Queens, because, you know, I want to help others. I don't want you to do it on your own. I want you to be able to, you know, connect with us, have a support system. There's lots of women already in the membership site. So you're meeting people going through the exact same thing that you're going through. And so not only are you meeting coaches and experts and going through these courses and stuff, but you're also meeting people who are going through the exact same thing as you right now. So it's amazing. So I did that first. And then I moved to Florida. I actually left Canada at the beginning of the year. So I moved to Florida, which was a huge change for everybody. And that's where I met the guy that I'm with now. And I'm telling you, like, I've never experienced love like this before. And actually, he posts a lot more than I do. Like, he's always tagging me and stuff, which is refreshing because, you know, I'm used to dating guys that, you know, want to hide you or aren't proud of you and that sort of thing. And he is so proud of me, and he's always like showing me off and that sort of thing. And he's proud to be with me and wants to share a life with me, which is refreshing because now I get to show my daughter what true love is actually like. So yeah, I'm all for posting the love life, right? Because I mean, yeah. I've been through a long road to get here. So it's certainly wonderful. And, you know, he's definitely God given because I don't even know how I found him. He was just everything I've ever wanted.
Yeah. I 100% agree because you don't have the greatest guy. I do, but that's how it should be, right?
Right.
Okay. For any woman out there looking for the perfect husband, gone, he's gone.
Yeah, sorry about your luck.
It's like, there's so, I always thought, okay, if I'm a good person who's healed and healing and in this for the right reason, they're like, I'm not alone. I cannot possibly be alone in this, right? There's got to be other women that are in the same situation as I am, and other men also. And there really are people out there. Yep. And what's right for me is not right for the other person. I remember, so when Dane and I were first dating, this is a great foot in the mouth thing. He was like he was trying to be sweet and give a compliment. Sometimes that doesn't work. Yeah. And he was like, you know, of all the people in Reno, Nevada that I could have met, I could have like matched up with 100 women and all of them could have been equally like my soulmate in totally different ways. And I'm so glad that it's you. And I was like, back up to the 100 women, all your soulmates.
You're like, there's only one woman.
Yeah, no, she's one. She's here. It's now. Your life has ended, as you know, because we all want to be like the greatest thing ever. And I love to give him a hard time about it because I am, and so is he. But it wasn't like there is one soulmate and then that's it.
Yeah.
You know, like he had a wife that died. What does that mean? Like he's dying? That's it? No, it means you move on in different ways. And so it's just interesting that you can be matched with many different people that you connect with in a really positive, healthy way, just different than others. And when you find that, it means so much to you. And here's the other thing that I love when we started talking is that the word sex comes up. And why is that a bad thing? We're supposed to have it.
Like,
right? It's great. I want it every day. I chase this man mercilessly. Like, why don't we talk about this anyway? So I think it's good that he shares and that you share.
Yeah.
It's important. You said, you know, you get to show your daughter, and we got to show our kids what a healthy relationship was like and what it was like when it was really hard and we almost didn't make it through and that we did. And I'm really grateful to that. But you can show more people. It doesn't have to be limited to like your daughter gets to see it. Like you're showing other women who really want that. And he's showing that you can have this and it's possible and it's amazing beyond what you imagined. So
yes.
I love that. So Viking Queens happened first. Mm-hmm. And he's awesomely supportive. I love that part. Yes. Both of our relationships. And things are changing with Viking Queens. So talk to me about coaching, what you specifically do. I want women to know, one, how do you get your book? Because that seems elusive to me. And I don't know why. Maybe I
don't know. No, it's really, you can find the book on VikingQueens.com. But it's on Amazon. All my books are on Amazon. I have like three of them right now. So, it's simple. Amazon, you can find my stuff. So it's You Taste Like Whiskey and Sunshine. I also have,
I put Whiskey and Sunshine in to search it and it's You Taste Like. So yeah. I got a lot of cool t-shirt options, but not your book.
I should probably get one of those t-shirts just to market it.
Yeah. Anyway. Okay. So Amazon, they're all there.
Yeah. And I also have like a relationship book called Bear, Sex, Love, and Finding Your Soulmate. And I wrote it before I found my soulmate. So it's not like me telling you how to go out and get a soulmate. It's about the experiences that I've had in love and how they changed over time and what I feel. Like I was single for 4 years before I met the guy that I'm with now because I was so sick and tired. I had left that abusive relationship and I stayed single until I knew that I was healthy enough in my mind and soul so that I would recognize something good. So these are my experiences through those 4 years of figuring out what it meant to be to find something healthy. And I did. So that's what that book's about. And yeah, they're all on Amazon.
I found him now. I looked it up while I was on because I wanted to be like, there's an error. There's not an error. I bought three books. In five seconds or less, you can buy three books. I just put it in wrong. So, and Viking Queens, let's end with discussing coaching and how you work with women specifically. And then like maybe what you would have told your younger self or what's the biggest struggle women come to you for or the biggest piece of advice, something like that, however you want to go with that.
Well, personally, I don't do coaching. I am just the portal into, I birthed the Viking Queens. I'm the CEO and the founder, and I bring about all the experts. I bring you into this fold of supportive women. So you can find me in the work that I do as well as all these amazing coaches. And, Jen's actually one of the contributors that's on Viking Queens. So you're not only finding all these amazing people, but you're already familiar with Jen and what she does. She's in there as well. So you're just going on VikingQueens.com. It's a membership site. So it's like a monthly membership. You can get right now I have a month free if you want to check it out for free, see if you like it, and then go from there. And that way you can test the ground to see if it's something that you're interested in and go from there.
Wow. That's really cool. I mean, I know I'm somewhere on there, but I forgot it was a membership instead of, so you just pay for the membership and then you connect people.
Yeah. And then you have unlimited options and like every single month new content is brought in. So it's like, you can never get over, you can never end what you're paying for. So it's always there. It's always refreshed. There's always new people coming in. So it's like a forever learning experience.
And then the podcast and soon the show or the radio show and then the show, the TV show coming up soon.
Yeah. My podcast is Crushing 40 and you can find it on iTunes. And then That's What She Said is launching in October.
For the podcast, I'm writing this in the notes for people that Crushing 40. Awesome. Holy cow. And you have links to everything. I mean, Viking Queen is great. So what piece of advice or the most common issue that you hear from women or the best piece of advice that you got or that you give? How do you want to end?
The way that I want to end, I guess, is letting women know, letting anybody know that you are enough right now as the person that you are. You know, there's nothing you can do that makes you more worthy because we're already born, worthy and good. And you know, you don't have to go out and do things to make yourself worthy of love or good things or a great life or a great career. And when I was younger, I did all the things. I got married really young. And to me, when I'm talking to my daughter, I'm like, how about you live first? You know, if I could go back and tell my younger self something, I would be like, live first and then settle down. Because I did the complete opposite and I missed out on a lot of things. And I was in a relationship I had no business being in. I was in I'm married to a man who was nowhere near my soulmate. And it was because I was young. I was young and I didn't even know who I was or what I wanted or what I was going to do with my life. And that's not the time that you get married. I don't think so anyways. I mean, some people will argue that they've been married for 30 years and they got married young and sometimes it works out. But to me, I believe that you should live first and have all the experiences, go out and get a career, make some mistakes, you know, go and travel the world, like do things and then settle down. Because I think there's lots of time for settling down.
Okay. Don't settle down, people. And if you have, you're worth it anyway. Thank you so much for being on. It was so fun.
No, thanks for having me. I love you. You know, we got to keep doing this. This is great.
For investing your time with me on At a Crossroads with the Naked Podcaster. I'm so glad that you joined our conversation. If you can take 2 minutes to share this episode with someone you think can benefit from it or it would have a positive impact on their life, that would be amazing. Go to the podcast page to sign up for the free membership site where all guest links are available. This podcast is designed to help you in your struggles. So reach out and let me know what you enjoy or what you would like to see more of. It will support me on the journey of causing a worldwide epidemic of healing, gratitude, and joy. Until next time, remember you are not alone in your struggle. Reach out to me on any platform. I love to connect. You are worth it to me. Have an amazing day.